Welcome to the Be Curious podcast, the podcast that champions solutions to some of the world's biggest problems. I'm your host, Louise Houghton, and in every episode, we get curious about a different subject, from the food that we eat and clothes that we wear to ocean plastic and overflowing landfills. All of our guests have brilliant minds and innovative ideas to make sure that you and I can live a sustainable, conscious, and pollutant-free life. And the best part is, this podcast is not just about listening. Here we are building a community of like-minded individuals who are curious about finding an alternative way to enhance their lives and the longevity of the planet. And if you're already curious and want to win some of the sustainable products or services offered to you by our lovely guests, then why not head over to our Instagram where you can find out about our giveaways. All the information on how to enter is there at becurious_podcast. It is such a pleasure to share what companies and organizations are doing for future generations. Everyone featured works in a sustainable way, and I love how much people are on the same page, wanting to create and innovate in order to make change. If you feel the same, then why not follow in my footsteps and sign the Science Declaration? This declaration is a call to all nations, societies, and organizations to devote more resources to the advancements of science and technology. They're encouraging people internationally to join forces in battling debilitating diseases, ensuring sufficient food for a growing world population, stopping the destruction of our environment, and engaging in joint endeavors to elucidate the secrets this fascinating universe holds. To add your name, go to make-science-not-war.org and take an active stand to demand more money is put into improving rather than destroying our world. You can also hear more about this declaration at the Future Insight Conference that's being held in Mainz, Germany on the 10th and 11th of July. Over the 2 days, academic and industry leaders will come together to share their knowledge and latest innovations. The conference focuses on interdisciplinary and transdisciplinary conversations and will cover topics of science, technology, and everything else making huge steps forward in their prospective industries. You're also welcome to enter competitions and contribute to their dream board, a place that allows you to dream big and share your visions for the future, what you want to see invented, and why. It's really your chance to get involved and take an active role in leaving the planet in a better place than when you were born onto it. That's how I see it anyway, and I hope you share the same view. To check out the competitions, get tickets, or write out your dreams, head to curiousfutureinsight.org for more information. Today on the podcast, we're getting curious about old equipment and surplus goods. Have you ever wondered what might happen to old rubber tires? Could they end up in a landfill? Yes, but could they end up on a children's playground floor? Yes, that's a possibility too. And here to share more about that and repurposing all of these used goods is Greg Berry, who is the founder and CEO of Municibid and also Surplus. Thank you so much for joining us, Greg. It's such a pleasure to have you on the podcast.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Now, this is a huge topic, and I'm so excited to dive into it with you today. Do you want to start by just sharing a little bit more with our audience about what Municibid and also Surplus do?
Sure. So Municibid is a company I founded in 2006. It's an online auction marketplace for governments to sell and auction things they no longer need, confiscate, lost and found, anything they have in possession that they would like to liquidate. So we give them the option to be able to do that. And they do that online. It's very similar to eBay, but we follow regulations that they need to follow. So that's a huge differentiator. So it is open to the public across the country and in Canada. It's governments all the way from state governments, counties, municipalities, down to school districts, universities, anything that's related to the government.
And what kind of items would you expect to see on there?
So probably our biggest categories are heavy equipment, vehicles, tools, and then things like IT equipment, kitchen equipment, gym equipment, anything that you can imagine a government would have or a school would have that they no longer need. But then in addition to things that you would not think they would have, such as airplanes, log cabins, bridges, just a number of different oddities that would sell.
old buses or ambulances.
Exactly. Yeah. I think at this point, 18 years in, we've pretty much seen it all.
So take us back to 2005, then, nearly 20 years ago now, when this idea first came into fruition. What was the idea behind it? Is it what it is today?
Sort of, actually. So I was, I ran for a local town council. There was an open position after a long time, and I was just kind of curious about what that experience would be like. I ran and I won. And so that was a whole learning experience in itself. But then when I got on council, I'm basically a lifelong entrepreneur. I started my first company right out of high school and never worked for anyone other than, you know, part-time jobs in high school. And so other than myself. In 2005, when I was elected, I saw right away that we were having a real problem. Our town was having a real problem selling things we no longer needed for a true market value.
And was this back in Philly?
This is in Pennsylvania, in the suburbs of Philadelphia. And so we would sell this used police car for $300, let's say. But it was really worth $3,000. And then the next agenda item later, we would argue over $1,000 to pay for a project or, you know, some other equipment. And I'm like, well, this is crazy. Like, why are we selling it? And it was just the process that governments were using at the time, and some still do, that basically put an ad in the paper and you have to go to the town hall, fill out a bunch of paperwork. And so what would happen is we'd have two or three people, maybe if we were lucky, go to the town hall, fill out this paperwork, and just put in lowball bids. So we'd end up awarding this $3,000 car for $300 because that was the highest of the three lowball bids. And so, I saw that this was also a problem in surrounding municipalities across the state of Pennsylvania and across the country. And just being kind of a problem solver and a tech guy, I put up this very rudimentary website just to see if it would work. And it did. We sold, the very first item we sold was a riding mower that a small town had, and they were hoping to sell it for $100, and it sold for $500, and they were thrilled. The next item was a police car that had a blown engine, and they were, again, hoping to sell it for a couple hundred dollars because that's kind of what they were used to getting. And it sold for $2,800. They thought there was a problem.
With no engine.
Yeah, a blown engine. And they thought there was a problem. They called me and said, hey, Greg, I think your system's not really working right. And I'm like, no, I think, let's see if they show up. And sure enough, the next day they showed up, so the winning buyer showed up with a check and took the car away, and they could not believe it. And so we had that testimonial, we had that result, and we kind of grew from there. And now we serve over 6,000 agencies across the country.
Amazing. Congratulations. And what did people do with an old police car like that with a blown engine?
Sometimes they'll repair it and resell it. But most times, it's for their own use. So they're buying it for their own use. And we see a lot, which is interesting now. Before, in the old ways, there were what I call professional buyers. So people that knew about these, you know, these government surplus items and that sort of thing. And they knew how to work the system and go to the town hall and fill out the paperwork. Now it's open to everyone. It's super convenient, super easy to use. People can find this stuff for sale. People know that it's for sale, which is the biggest benefit that we offer. And then, they're comfortable and it's convenient to be able to bid on these and win. So a lot of times we actually see parents buy their kids their first cars off Municibid. And or we'll see a small business buy equipment that they use for, let's say, their landscaping equipment or for the landscaping company. And then we'll see people buy all kinds of different items for reuse and upcycle projects that they're doing. And so, yeah, it's really interesting.
Yeah, there's so many amazing stories, and we'll get to some of those a little bit later on. But just in terms of the infancy of the actual company then, how easy was it to kind of get it really up and running from those first few products that you put online?
It's not easy at all. First of all, it's a double-sided marketplace. So it's like, all right, do you have the buyers or do you have the sellers first? But I kind of knew early on that the more important side was to get the sellers, the governments, to come on. But that was also the much harder sale because this is a new process for them. Governments aren't really quick to try new things or adopt new technologies. And so It took a bit of convincing, and it took a while till we had sort of, enough of those testimonials and results that we could, that, you know, really show to other governments that we were legit and that this was actually a system that worked.
Why did it need to be specific to governments and schools only?
Because there were other options. Like, you could sell on eBay if you wanted, but governments really couldn't. So in 2006, in particular, in Pennsylvania, they passed this Electronic Bidding Law Act, which allowed governments and schools to sell their surplus online. So this was kind of new, at least in Pennsylvania, but pretty much the entire country. There are some other providers that have been around more in the South and like kind of the West, but not in the Northeast, which is where we still are the largest provider in the Northeast and then now into the Midwest. But we serve governments and schools all across the country at this point. It just kind of like one at a time, really, at the beginning. And then, they would refer each other, so this public works department director in one town would talk to the guy next in the, in the neighboring town. And there's like, well, who'd you use to sell this backhoe or this dump truck? And they're like, oh, we use Municipid. So, a lot of our business has come from referrals from other governments talking to each other.
That's amazing. And did you have the tech down yourself, or did you have to hire in people who knew how to work all of that website?
A little bit of both. So I have a technology background. That was my first company out of high school. And so I was very familiar with the internet. And so I put together, again, this rudimentary auction site that barely worked, but it worked good enough. And I had a developer that I worked with, to implement changes and that sort of thing. And then, but I did all the marketing myself. And in the very beginning, so I talked about, sort of going town to town to get them to sell with us. But then what we would do is we would go to every Home Depot, Lowe's, grocery store, anywhere that we could put up the flyers with those little ripoff tags at the bottom with our website and what we're selling. And then also kind of local advertisements. So it was very kind of feet on the ground to get started. Obviously, now we have a much more sophisticated marketing campaign, marketing director, and that sort of thing.
Nearly 18 years later, you're soon to celebrate your 18th anniversary.
Yeah, that's great.
Congratulations.
I can't believe it. I thought when I started this, it would be about 5 years.
Well, here we are. Doing amazing. So well done on that. And thank you as well for taking all of these used products and equipments off the landfill, because really, that's kind of a big issue that we're talking about here, is if they don't get sold and they're not upcycled, then it ends up in the landfill.
Sure.
And our landfills are overflowing at the moment. Do you want to talk on that?
Sure. Yeah. So a lot of these items that wouldn't be sold would go to a landfill. So there's a couple opportunities for governments to sell. And then if they don't have any buyers, they can try giving the stuff away. But typically it just ends up going into a dumpster and into a landfill. And, so obviously there's items that have value, pieces of heavy equipment, vehicles, if not for use, for scrap metal purposes, that kind of diverts. But there's other things like computers, tires, even fire hoses get upcycled into cool new products like belts and handbags and all kinds of just interesting accessories.
You'll have to find artists as well doing strange things with old bottle tops or something.
Exactly.
Like that too.
So, yeah. So
anything can be upcycled.
Exactly. Yeah. And so there's all these creative and unique ways that buyers use the items they won for. And so it could be even like a fire truck that can no longer be used as a fire truck to be used on a farm to be able to hold water and water the farm. There's just endless opportunities for different items.
I love that you said that people will buy a car for their child, who's just passed their test or something like that on a secondhand bidding website like yours. But why do you think that there is this idea that people always want new things?
Probably the keep up with the Joneses thing. But, with that said, there's also a lot of people who are looking for used items. So just as many people. Yeah. For example, the hardest items to sell is used furniture. For some reason, and I'm guilty of this too, like I just want to buy a new chair, or something new. You could buy something relatively new that's in good shape for basically nothing because for some reason people don't want to buy furniture. So that is kind of like an outlier example. But there is no shortage of people that buy all kinds of different items. In fact, I am often surprised that things even sell. Like I'm like, there are people like, you know, bidding against each other to buy this thing. And so, yeah, it's
most of the items in my apartment are actually secondhand, apart from my bed. Yeah. That was then the mattress.
Well, yeah, that mattress is kind of a whole other deal.
I don't know. Back in England, I would used to think that people would buy a secondhand mattress, no problem. But here, for some reason, it's a very different mindset. People don't like to sleep in someone else's bed. I've heard that a lot.
Interesting. Yeah.
But if we talk about, you know, the waste issue, then who do you think is really to blame for people always wanting new things? What is keeping up with the Joneses?
I think it's a societal thing. And, you know, and I'm not sure that's necessarily new. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's just a matter of society and how, you know, people are kind of competitive with each other to make sure they have the best and the, you know, the brightest new toy or new piece of equipment or new vehicle.
But how do you think that we need to change people's mindsets then in order for them to see that there are alternative ways of purchasing?
What's interesting is, so when I started Municibid, it was right before the 2008, economic downturn. And I was really kind of concerned how that was going to affect our business. It actually helped our business. Then again, in 2020 with the pandemic, I was very concerned, you know, who's going to be buying this stuff. And unbeknownst to me, people were looking for deals. You know, they didn't want to buy new. They still needed a vehicle. And in fact, the whole supply chain issue really helped us as a business, but helped the buyers too, because these governments were selling these vehicles still and they were available. So, you could go and buy this vehicle today and drive it off the lot basically. But if you went to a dealer, you'd have to wait 6 months because of the supply chain.
Right, or even wood coming in from Scandinavia, there was all of these ships sitting outside the ports and couldn't get in, could they?
It's all types of different items that governments happen to have available. And so, you know, people were able to buy them. And it wasn't even necessarily a matter of a discount. In fact, some used cars were selling for more than their newer vehicles because you couldn't get the newer vehicles. And so that was an interesting, issue that was, you know, kind of a result of the pandemic. And then, but it was a benefit for our business, but also a benefit for the buyers. And I always like to say, and it really is true, that Municibid is a win-win-win. The township or the municipality or school, they win because they're able to sell their stuff for a true market value. The buying public, the person that's winning, is able to source an item they might not otherwise have found. And then the taxpayers of the government are, you know, not having to make up for all those lost funds. You know, so we have governments that are selling millions of dollars worth of stuff each year. You know, if they're only getting 10% of the true market value, those are like real numbers, especially when it's a small town.
But what about electrical equipment then? Because electrical equipment is something that is always developing, and you understand the need for like a newer computer because it's just going to run more efficiently or something like that. How do you deal with things like that?
Yeah, so typically, every now and then we'll have a town or a municipality. And when I say that, you know, again, I'm talking state government to counties and municipalities and schools, universities. They'll have maybe a computer here and there. Some will sell them by the pallets full. So it really does depend, but there's value actually in these computers because of the precious metals inside them. So we'll have e-waste companies bid against each other for basically the right to buy these pallets of computers because they're interested in the gold and the other precious metals that are within the computer itself. So they'll strip them down, they'll strip out the gold, and then they'll send that off to the rest off to recycling for scrap metal.
I never knew that there was gold inside the computer.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting, especially the older computers, which, let's face it, governments tend to have. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Why do they need gold inside and all these precious metals?
I'm a computer nerd, but I think it has to do with the way it conducts electricity. But I think that's the extent of my knowledge of that.
Do you have any sort of transparency on your website as well, where people need to, share definitely kind of whether an item is working or functioning in some kind of particular way?
Oh, sure. Yeah. So we really work with our sellers to make sure that they are upfront with all the information they have about an item. There are some cases where they just simply don't know. But with respect to transparency, that's one of the kind of the core values of our company, is that everything's transparent. And it's why governments use us, because they're able to get a full report of everyone who placed any bid, what time they bid, where they bid from, that type of information. So it's all open. It meets their open records requirements. And then from a buyer standpoint, unlike a lot of other sites, you can go on Municibid and see what things sell for and when they sold. And, if you're really curious about what a 2015 John Deere tractor sells for, you can go on and you can look at all the 2015 tractors that have been sold over the years and, figure out what the value is. We keep everything very transparent.
Can you give us a couple more examples of how Municibid is actually helping with other environmental issues?
Yeah, sure. So one of the big things with being online and offering these governments an online scenario is that, a lot of governments used to take their stuff to a live auction. And so basically what they would have to do is get all this equipment, all these items over to a live auction. And then people have to drive from all over the place to get to that live auction just to be able to even look at what's for sale or even to place a bid, let alone, win.
Like, I always bought my cars from auction, actually. So we would drive an hour to the auction, and then my dad bought one too. We'd have to piggyback the cars all the way home.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And so now with everything being available online, it reduces all that movement of vehicles and, of people having to drive hours for no reason. And then also the other thing is, either if with a live auction or in this old what's called sealed bid process, where they put the local ad in the paper and you have to go to they usually would do that one time a year. So what would happen is they would have a fleet of vehicles that are ready to sell just sitting there deteriorating, dripping oil, gas, lubricants all over the ground while, and then not to mention losing value by the day, tires going flat, batteries dying and that sort of thing. So it really reduces the impact even in the smallest way. But when you start talking about tens of thousands of governments doing this, then again, you're really making a big impact.
Yeah, let alone just the products as we were talking about before, actually, going into being made into something that's more sustainable, like the tires going into a children's playground, for
right.
example.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. So, again, there's so many different examples of that. Just sort of examples that would seem more, are, I guess, less surprising, like a school bus that's sold that's turned into an RV or what they call a schoolie, or a van or an ambulance that's turned into a work truck. Or in one case, we had this interesting story where a New England Patriots fan bought an ambulance and turned it into this whole tailgate operating machine. It was really cool. And so they put the grill on the gurney that came out. So when they would just open up the back doors, pull out the gurney, and then the grill was there. So it was like a really cool project. There was another one who bought basically like a city bus and turned it into this Disney themed motorhome. And so that was kind of an interesting thing.
I've seen one actually being made into a healing bus, and they go around and actually help people in underprivileged communities.
Yeah, so like mobile dog groomers is another example. So, those are really cool examples. And then just people buying them, especially ambulances, I think are cool that people turn into homes. I'm like, I'm not sure I could live in an ambulance, but these people do. And they, especially during the pandemic, it was such a hot thing, the whole RV life. And people just kind of like hitting the road in all these different types of vehicles. So we have a lot of stories from the pandemic related to that.
How do you find out about those stories? Because you don't have to share what you're buying it for on the website, do
right,
you?
Right, sure. No. So we ask. In every sort of winning bid, confirmation, email or notice, we ask them, hey, do you have an interesting story? And then what we do is once a year we have what we call Share Your Story contest. So we award like five different places. So yeah, we find that out. And then we decided that, you know what, there's enough of these that we can do this on a regular basis. So we started a podcast to highlight all these cool stories about people using the equipment they won or the items they won.
And where can you actually go? What is the website to go to Municibid if you wanted to?
Well, it's just municibid.com. So you can think of it as municipal and bid combined. But any which way you spell that, you'll find us.
If you're like me, then you're curious about the future and what that will look like for our children and our children's children. A great place to feed my curiosity is at the Curious Future Insight Conference that happens every other year. I've already got my tickets to head to Mainz, Germany on the 10th and 11th of July for this year's edition. Over the 2 days, academic and industry leaders will come together to share their knowledge and their latest innovations. They will talk about the problems we're encountering on a global scale, but this is not a conference that focuses on everything going wrong. Quite the opposite. The Future Insight Conference is a really positive and uplifting place to be because the speakers have been working for years on solutions. From major players like Merck to startups only a few months old, the lineup of keynotes and panels really show the seniority in each industry. And the best part is that everyone is talking about what they're doing to make a difference in the world. This year, among many others, they have the CEO of BioNTech, Ugur Sahin, the founder of Boston Dynamics, Mark Rybert, and also the Nobel Prize winner and professor, Stephen Chu. It's a place where you can connect with like-minded individuals in academia and industry, take part in workshops like the Microplastics Hackathon, and you may even be interested in entering yourself or your company into one of the many competitions they have running annually. They have the Nature Spinoff Prize, Science and Shorts Prize, and the Future Insight Prize is the creme de la creme, awarding €500,000 as a helpful research grant. If you want to find out more about the event and grab your tickets, head over to curiousfutureinsight.org to find out more information. I'll also put a link to the page in the show notes. And if you do come and you see me there, please don't be shy and say hi. It would be such a pleasure to connect with you all.
So let's talk a little bit more about Surplus, the other company that you've opened up here in 2024. Why did you decide you needed a second company in order to do that?
That's the million-dollar question. Just about I have an 18-year-old. I'm starting all over again. I acquired the domain name a few years ago, and with the purpose of setting up essentially the same sort of thing we're doing for governments, but for businesses. And you know, just talking with our customers, and our buyers are mostly businesses. So I would say about 80% of our buyers are businesses, 10% are other governments, and 10% are the just general public. And so in talking with all these businesses, they were frustrated with the current ways of selling stuff, whether it's Facebook Marketplace or Craigslist or, you know, these other outlets, and just dealing with what comes with that. People never showing up, scammers, people just constantly emailing with no intent.
There seems to be more and more of that on those platforms nowadays,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, definitely. And when you're dealing, and then also when you're dealing with business equipment or heavy equipment, it's really not the right place to sell that type of equipment. There are other providers on, I'll say, the higher end. But they're very expensive. They're, you know, it's traditionally an auction environment and that sort of thing. And so what we decided to do based on all these conversations was to create a business-to-business marketplace. So everyone on surplus.com is a business. And so you have to prove that you're a business in order to join. So we wanted this sort of closed marketplace just for business people because we wanted to have a premium listing service. So instead of an auction, it's essentially a classified, but allows businesses to set an asking price, and then it allows potential buyers to make offers.
So it is a members-only platform.
Correct.
But do they have to subscribe to something, or they just have to register?
No, it's a free service if you want to just be a member to buy. But if you want to sell, there's an annual membership fee, which allows you to sell an unlimited number of items per year, which really makes sense for these businesses.
And are there other competitors in the market doing that kind of thing?
There's really none that are doing a business-to-business marketplace that's specific for that. There are plenty of websites and advertising outlets for selling, you know, just kind of equipment, and it's open to anyone. So you're kind of dealing with the same thing, you know, that you are, you know, when you're opening up to the general public, you're opening yourself up to a lot of hassle.
And how's the new baby growing?
It's good. So we launched it exclusively for Municipal customers only. And this was only 2 months ago. And so we're just 2 months into it. And we're about to push out our marketing campaign on a national basis. Well, it's a local, regional, and national basis. And that's where we'll see how it really does after a few months of that.
What are your kind of short-term goals with it?
Yeah, so we'd like to get upwards of about 1,000 companies by the end of the year using it, our members. And I think we'll do that. I think it's a pretty reasonable amount. You know, but there are 30 million businesses in the United States or more. Now, not all of them are the right fit for this, you know, because we're a premium classified site. So we're, you know, in fact, we only allow items to have a $500 minimum value. So we don't allow for someone to come on and sell like an old fax machine or something like that. So we want to keep everything higher dollar worth or a higher dollar value.
Is it U.S. only or could Canada or
U.S. and Canada right now? But I definitely can foresee this expanding globally. So yeah, there's a lot of opportunity here because of the size of the markets, an order of magnitude larger than governments. There's about 90,000 governments in the United States versus 32 million businesses in the United States.
So obviously, as we've been saying, you know, surpluses for business to business only, members only, and then Municibid for governments and schools to sell only. What kind of tips would you have for just the general public who had old equipment that they were wanting to sell or not put on the landfill?
Sure. If you're going to sell something online, which is the way I would recommend doing it, just because of the exposure that you have, you're just, you know, if you try to sell it basically locally, like it's tough. So that's one issue with Facebook Marketplace. If you are a homeowner and you happen to have a really nice lawn tractor, you know, okay, you can put that on Facebook Marketplace, but only local people are seeing it. Same with Craigslist. So there, you know, if you can find ways to get it out on a much larger platform or that has a much larger reach, that would be probably the number one thing. But then also photos, having high quality photos, being very truthful with the information about the item itself, maintenance records, you know, if there's anything wrong with it, any detail that you would want to know as a buyer. So if you really kind of have to put your buyer hat on and say, what questions would I ask about this item if I were buying it? Because those are questions.
Yeah, the transparency. It's almost if you see something that says good as new, you sort of don't believe it. But if it says it's got a tiny scratch on the left-hand side at the bottom and they send a photo of this tiny scratch, you sort of believe that it's more genuine, that there's nothing else wrong with it. Yeah, so I think full transparency makes a big difference. But what kind of other sites would actually get it out there to a wider audience then?
There are some sort of national auction sites, but they typically don't tend to work with the general public. They're also, you know, either dealing with businesses or governments. But, you know, typically, you know, just a member of the general public isn't going to go that direction because they just don't have, you know, expensive equipment that's really worthwhile to go to that degree. So yeah, it really kind of does depend, which is exactly why, or one of the many reasons why we started Surplus, because there really isn't a way to have this national exposure for this equipment that is just for businesses.
How big is your team now?
So we have 6 full-time and then about 15 other contractors and freelancers across, you know, different departments.
All based in LA?
No, we are nationwide. And so when I started Municibid again in 2006, I purposely set out to make it remote first. And, you know, obviously being online, it's a little easier to do that, although not as easy because of the amount of trade shows and sort of in-person meetings and demonstrations that I had to do back then. Now it's a little different. We have a sales team and it's a lot easier to be remote. Now we did have offices for a long time. And then, you know, kind of leading into the pandemic, but actually before the pandemic, everyone started working home from home a little bit more. And then the pandemic hit, and then we just got rid of our offices. But we were really kind of remote anyway, so it wasn't that big of a deal for us to do it. I do miss being in the office, actually. We had a lot of fun, but we are very good at working remote. And we're, you know, a lot of us are on the road quite a bit anyway, so it makes sense.
Fantastic. Well, I wish you the best of luck with Surplus. It sounds like that's a really new, I wish you the best of luck with Surplus. It sounds like it's going to be a great new baby that you've got to nurture after you've got this 18-year-old that's going to, you know, pack up and leave home, go off to college. Something like that.
Maybe I was afraid of being an empty
nest. There you go. It's been such a pleasure talking to you today, Greg, learning more about Munisabid and Surplus and hearing about all of the solutions that you're creating with this platform in order to take these things away from the landfill, because ultimately that's kind of what we want to get curious about, is like how to find these solutions to these environmental challenges that we're up against in this world that we're in today. And where can people find more information about your podcast and you know, just your websites again, sure, if you want to relist them?
Yeah, everything is on munisabid.com. And then we're at Munisabid on all the socials.
Fantastic. And we'll put it all in the show notes as well. And Instagram is, of course, where you can find more information about our podcast and everything that we're doing, our giveaways that we have going on, and who our other guests are that are coming up on the future episodes. So go to becurious_podcast if you want to find out more information about us and keep up to date. My name is Louise Houghton. Thank you so much, Greg, for being a wonderful guest with us today on the Be Curious podcast. And until next time, stay curious.